I'm opening. We have an eye, sort of a nostril, two teeth. One of the teeth has a small cavity. Close call, folks, but I think we got here just in time.
Presented by Maria Menounos and Kevin Undergaro, this is Anatomy of a Movie. In-depth discussions and breakdowns of various movie titles. And now that you've seen the movie, let the dissection begin.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Anatomy of a Movie, where we dissect films in all of its parts. Today, we are doing The Maze Runner.
Woo!
We are excited. I'm your host, Marissa Serafini. Joining me, we have a full panel today. Oh,
epic.
That music's epic. Introduce yourselves.
Hi, I am Roxy Stryer. Very excited to be here and getting pumped with this music.
Yeah, they're trying to pump us up right now. Hi, guys. This is Sarah Stratton.
Hey, movie fans, it's Dimitri.
Yes, we're all here. We're excited. And if you haven't noticed, the signs behind us, Movie Talk Nation, which is Anatomy of a Movie, is going to integrate into a bigger entity.
MTN.
Yes, Movie Talk Nation is a humongous network where we talk movies, and we are definitely going to talk about this one. First of all, overall impressions, what did you think? Roxy, we'll start with you.
You know, I really enjoyed this movie. I thought that there were some gaping plot holes. It didn't seem to bother me as much as some, but I thought it was entertaining, Sarah. And I didn't want to look away from the screen. I jumped. I loved it. Love is a strong word, but I really, really enjoyed it.
Okay, Sarah.
I'm not going to tear this movie apart because there were moments and sections of the film that I really liked. If this is a franchise movie, obviously, and I love franchises, this is one of the only initial movies that I'm not pumped to see the second one. I'm not saying it was a horrible movie because there was some really good instances, but how they promoted the next one, where they rounded things up with the plot holes, with the motivation, with the character arcs, I was just like, oh, I really don't need to see number two.
Okay.
Maybe I can be convinced by the next trailer. I don't know.
I'm pretty much in Sarah's camp. I actually felt that the tech aspects of this movie were fine. The acting was really good, but I really felt that I just watched a very convoluted episode of Lost.
My favorite show of all time.
Except now I don't get the next week to try to answer any questions. I thought this movie was all questions with very little answers. And, it's mortal sin. It's movie mortal sin is that it's not a self-contained movie. There was no beginning, middle, or end. And then there were plot contrivances, plot holes. There were things that happened that just, were there for the sake of being there. I like the kids. The set pieces were done well. Wes Ball did a good job directing. I felt that it was edited together pretty well. The glades and the actual maze looked good. It got me in right from the beginning, too. I mean, it started off, like, really okay. And I have no recollection of the book because I didn't read it.
Right.
And so,
this movie based on James Dashner trilogy, the Maze Runner being the first one of the series.
Yeah, so I had nothing, nothing to go on other than the movie itself. And when I was done at the end, I was like, what the hell did I just watch? Like, what? I still don't know what was going on. So,
I have to put that out there as well that I did not read the books. I think the books sound very interesting. I'm not saying that this movie would deter me from reading them because I'm still interested in it. For me, it was like this movie was a lot about questions and the audience living in the unknown and the characters living in the unknown. And then by the time they started giving me answers, the answers just were plot holes and weren't satisfactory and weren't good answers. If they had ended the movie a lot earlier with me knowing a lot less, I probably would have liked it more.
That's what I said to you when we walked out. I said, how would you have felt if it ended when the entire gang decided to go into the maze and then we ended? You know, we see this motley crew walking in and then we cut and we don't know why they're doing this or how they're doing this or if they're going to get out. And then we went into the second movie. I know that wouldn't be how the books went about it, but would that have made the movie a better movie for you guys?
It would have made it better because then I would have Yes, it would have made it better for me because my biggest problems happened after that. Yeah. I don't think it, but it would have made it better.
I like the fact that that group went into the maze, because throughout the whole film, we see every time they go into the maze, they learn something more. And it slowly progresses the story forward, like, okay, we're getting near the end of how to get out of the maze. And once they finally make that decision to get in the maze, the only result that you want as an audience member is to get out. So I'm glad that they all went in to see the end result that they did get out.
I know, I'm with you, but here's my one of my biggest plot holes is that, you know, didn't all those people prior to Thomas getting in there, like, how come they didn't find any of this stuff? Like, they had been there for years before he got there, and they're supposed to be smart kids, apparently, from what I learned at the end. But and they weren't smart enough. Like, I couldn't figure out what
none
the
of them
runners
had seen or killed a griever or at all in 3 years.
And I couldn't figure out why you had runners. To, like, what their purpose was, if it wasn't to find out how to get the hell out of here.
But that's the difference with the book and the movie, because I read most of the book. I'll say, you know, I'll bring the book references into it, that the runners have, in the book, the runners have seen the grievers. They know that they are very dangerous things, creatures to, like, be left alone. Don't go anywhere near. If you see one, run. And in the book, they made mention that they don't know. These are just deadly creatures. Stay away from them. So, but then that's a big difference. And also,
and I'm not understanding what the difference is.
In the book, that the runners have actually seen the grievers and they know they're bad. In the movie, they say they've never seen grievers, but they still know they're bad.
Okay.
Okay. In the movie they had some familiarity with what the grievers were.
They said they'd never seen, nobody had ever seen a griever and lived to tell about it.
Right.
And also, you say that these runners have been running for 3 years and never found anything. Also, it just adds, maybe they haven't, but it makes Thomas different because he's the only one who's curious enough to keep going, go the extra mile, find more answers, and is more courageous and more brave to, face a griever by himself and go the extra step to be like, okay, this will progress the story forward and add a little bit more. And also just adding fresh eyes to the maze. I mean, these people have literally been staring at the same walls for years. And when you add someone else to it, it's like he's going to be the more understandable one to see something different.
I just have to figure that within 3 years, somebody else would have picked up and said, you know what, I want to get the hell. Like, it took till Thomas. Now, another major change in the book that I'm aware of, anyways, without having read it, is that in the book, 20 people came up at the same time. It wasn't one person a month that came up. So that sort of kind of, I think, changes the dynamic. Is that, right?
A person comes up every month.
But in the book,
In the book, a person comes up every month.
Oh, I thought it was in the book, but they came up as like 20.
Oh.
I thought. But,
I didn't find a problem with what you found a problem with. Mm-hmm. I thought that it's very believable that something can be going one way for 3 years. And if it is only one person coming up every month, you kind of go with the flow of things. That's the way the world seems to work. When you see people doing something, people just go along with it all of the time. And it takes somebody to come in and be different and do something different. It happens all of the time in life.
But they're always getting somebody different in.
But people starting with movements, you know, there are people who go in and they don't want to cause waves, you know, because we have all of these other guys in there. You've got Albie, who's been there since day one, and he's kind of saying there were dark days. You don't want to go against the grain. So if you're a newcomer, maybe you just say, okay, I don't want to go against the grain. And yes, I do think that the runners, their goal was to try to figure out a way out, especially if you look at the way that they mapped the maze. That was an insane moment for me when you saw that they had placed all of these things. They literally mapped. Yeah,
it's not like they weren't doing anything. They literally mapped.
So think about what you're saying.
I challenge you to get into that maze and map every single wall.
But think about what you're saying. So they were smart enough to map it out, but they're just dumb enough to not figure out.
Not kill a griever. That's the point. They only could get past a certain point if they killed the griever. That's how the key opened the thing. None of them had killed a griever. Look how hard it was to kill that griever.
I understand. I'm not saying, but you figure, again, 3 years is a good hefty amount of years.
It is a good amount of
years. They were able to, like, map it out the way that they did. And I'm like going, okay, but yet that's as far as they ever got. Like, they had, like, what are you a runner? Like, if you're not taking those extra steps to do, and it took Thomas to be the person to bring this up, and then that brought everything up in arms, and I get it. That's to move the plot along. It was just one of those things going, why did it wait until Thomas? Like, didn't anybody else have the sense to go, you know, we have all this great information and intel that we've spent time and risked our lives to do. There's got to be another step. We've got to figure something out.
But Thomas didn't know he had to kill the Griever. It kind of was accidental. I mean, he was smart enough to run and make it so the walls were closing in. But it wasn't like he was like, guys, you know what? I've solved this mystery. In order to get to the next step, we have to kill a Griever. He killed the Griever, and then they figured it out together.
That's my other point, too. Then he didn't do anything. Nobody did anything by their smarts. They did it by accident. It wasn't that, like, they were
trying to
find anything.
Except when he stabs himself in the leg.
I'm sorry?
Except when he stabs himself in the leg.
What do you mean?
So he could get his memory back.
Again, well, it's a good thing they sent that girl up with two vials of serum.
Because, which was, like, also another question. I was like,
that was,
well,
like,
how
a little
come,
bit like,
if, how did they? If the and they called them the creators, the people who actually put
Wicked?
All these boys here.
Yeah,
Wicked. But in the book, they're called the creators.
And I thought in the book they're called Wicked, W-I-C-K-E-D, mm-hmm. and it stands for something different.
Yeah, but they called the people just the group itself, the creators who put them there. That my question is, if they were there the whole time and they know that these people are dying, don't you think they would have sent the antidote serum earlier?
But they seem to love Thomas.
They seem to be completely fine with people dying.
Yeah. But Thomas is one of them.
She says that multiple people couldn't make it out, and she thought that there was going to be less survivors. Yeah. They didn't need to save anyone. She didn't want anyone else to
live. But the fact that Teresa...
I'm with you.
The fact that Teresa came up through the box, her being the only girl, and with serum was too convenient.
Yeah.
Okay.
Which made her character
suspicious.
Way more suspicious than she should have been.
I'm confused on many things. Now, let me start with the one that I'm most confused about, which is, and I know I'm skipping around to the end here, but it has to do with the whole movie. Mm. What is a lie and what is the truth? So we have this whole thing at the end where it's staged that she kills herself. She blows her brains out. But what part of this now?
And I think we even saw a body. Like,
we saw a hand and a gun.
We saw a body,
right,
like the legs of a body.
Right.
So what I'm confused about is this serum actually making them get their memory back? Or is it giving them memories that never happened? Was Thomas ever really part of their crew? If he was, did they send him down? Did he sneak down? How did this girl get down? Why is she the only girl?
these might be questions that are answered in the second and third.
Right. I just don't know how much to believe. So at this point, I don't know what's true or not. Is this woman really good, and they're really trying to find a cure, or is she actually just effing with everybody? I don't know.
When Patricia Clarkson's Ava Page, she goes, I understand that you're all confused, angry, and I'm like going, oh, you got that right in the head.
Yeah.
I go, I have no idea what the hell's happening. And then when she came back in the end, I said,
she wipes the blood off?
Yeah, I'm like, oh, confusion and anger right now? Like,
not
you have no idea.
Well, and that adds to her character, because the way that it was staged, it was to make her character look like, no, we were doing a good thing, and to cover the fact that she was actually doing a bad thing.
Is that true, though? Or was she doing a good thing?
I don't know what the hell anybody was doing.
Is the story she told actually true, and then she just needed them to keep going, so she staged that thing? Or is it not true, and she's literally just putting them through all these tests? Did the world even get burned by the sun? Well, I don't know.
I think she's just trying to justify her character, that she's trying to play like a good person, even though we as an audience know that she's a bad person.
Do we know?
This is what I'm going to say, because I literally haven't been able to get a word in over you guys in the past 5 minutes.
Yes, Sarah, go.
There's different options about what could be a truth and what could be a lie, and so you have to look at it from a writing perspective of what's the most beneficial for a movie audience, for a book audience. If she is completely lying, I don't want to be watching this movie.
Right, if she's literally just messing with them.
If it's complete lie, I don't want to watch it. Because you telling me lying answers and giving me no information is just not that fun. if she's telling a mix of a lie and the truth, that at least is interesting because it provides conflict. I am learning. I am gaining where this plot is going and if there's a point.
So what part would be lie and what would be truth?
What I'm assuming is that they were these kids. They were tested. They were supposed to be very smart or very skilled to find some sort of new generation that has basically been not vaccinated but is immune to the virus that is set in this catastrophe world. I believe there was a world catastrophe. I believe they're in search of some sort of cure, and I believe they're looking in the next generation. Because without those things, like, there's no point of this entire series.
Yeah, I don't... Again, it just goes back to being a self-contained movie.
There was it's not self-contained.
No, and that's a problem, though. Because when you... Even when you look at the Hobbit, look at the Lord of the Rings. The first book... Pretty much, you're introduced to characters beginning, middle, and an end.
Look at 21 Jump Street.
Sure. No, but even when you're looking at Star Wars, you know, George Lucas had no idea.
A series that's even closer, Hunger Games.
Sure.
The first one of a trilogy, the first one still had an ending.
You know, Godfather. There were three of those, but the first one had a beginning, a middle, and an end. There was no, like, its biggest sin was, and again, not being self-contained, having way too many questions than giving us answers. The plot contrivances, again, going back to the serum, that led to, like, a whole bunch of things. Because, well, it's a good thing that they brought up the two things of serum, and boy, it's great that Albie got stung so that we can try, so we could, you know, we could pump him up with it and see what happens. And then, oh, he got his memory back. Oh, okay. So now, good thing we have another one so I could try it on myself. And, oh, poor Albie, who's been there since day one, he gets killed. So we save him to kill him. I was like, okay, that makes sense. And
there were a lot of last-minute deaths.
Yeah. And then, well, you know...
Bye-bye, Chuck.
Chuck. Well, Chuck was like another mortal sin. It's like Gally, okay, who chooses to stay.
No. This is the thing that completely threw me off as a reader of the book and as a watcher of this movie.
Yeah.
Albie is the asshole character in the book. He's the one that gives all the... Sorry for my explicit language. He's the one that gives all the shit to Thomas and gives him the hard time and is completely dismissive of Thomas. He's the one that's always being the a-hole supreme
Interesting.
Man.
What about Gally?
And then Gally's the nice one who's showing everyone, who's showing him around and showing him the ropes of the Glade. And in the movie, they completely switch the characters and make Albie the leader, who's more accepting and more welcoming of Thomas in the atmosphere. And Gally was the asshole one, which I don't know why they would make that character switch.
I get it a little bit.
Fascinating.
I'm thinking it's partially because if you have, like, a nice leader, you understand why they've kind of... It gives you a little bit more reason why they've been okay with nothing really changing.
Right.
If they do have a cooperative society, if they have moved out of the Dark Ages and become to someone that... is good, has a method, has a structure, and people can be happy. Versus, like, if you're integrating someone new in a society that isn't really working, where not everyone's happy, they're not going to turn on him as quickly as an outsider. So it's going to be much more acceptable for everyone going to be like, yes, Thomas is right. Let's find a way out. That's at least my rationale.
No, but I was going, but I'm trying to figure out. I mean, that's fascinating to me because why bother switching? Like, if Albie was the asshole, why doesn't he... I mean, it makes no sense to make it Gabby and...
Gabby. That's what Sarah called him, too.
Gabby.
But just as a reader of the book, I was completely thrown off when I saw that in the movie. I'm like, Albie's supposed to be the mean one.
You were probably waiting for, like, a twist or a switch or something.
Yeah, like, or maybe he has a redeeming scene or something. But to find out that... Gally was the mean one, and Albie was the nice one.
It threw me off
just as an audience member. And I think it would throw anybody off who has read the whole series and who's read the first book and was expecting a completely different person.
Right. I do have to say, though, changing topics a little bit, what I loved about the movie is that it made me jumpy. I thought that was really... I haven't felt jumpy like that in a long time. There would be moments that I was surprised by and that I felt really twisted things up and that I would, like, dig my nails into Sarah's leg. And I thought that a lot of the actors did a phenomenal job as well. I don't know how much I was supposed to giggle throughout the movie. I did giggle a lot. I don't know whether that's a good thing or
giggle
bad
as
thing.
In there you just, thought scenes were funny?
There were just moments that I thought were funny. Yeah.
Like what particular moments that made you giggle?
I don't even, it had a lot to do with Gally. I don't remember the specific moments, and he was my favorite.
Well, that's because Roxy over here did not see Gally as, like, the scary bad guy. She loved him.
I loved him.
She comes up the movie saying that Gally was her favorite character.
I really liked him. And then when he killed himself, I was like, oh, I mean, didn't kill himself, killed Chuck and then died. I was like, well, there we go for the second movie. My favorite character is dead now. And also, in the biggest plot hole of the entire movie, how the hell did Gally get out?
Well, that was a major problem with me because it was like his only reason to show up at the end was to kill the fat kid.
Yeah.
And to make the audience go, oh, he killed the fat kid.
And there's so many issues, but it
made no sense. Wow. Like,
how'd he catch up? How did he decide to
leave? Why
is
he by himself?
How did he figure out this whole key thing? Did he get the code that only the runners had? Like,
how did he get past the grievers?
Did he kill everybody else inside? Was he really there all along? Was he hiding behind somebody?
He had no redeeming qualities, and then his end scene wasn't redemption in and of itself. There was no point to having him
fat kid, and that bothers me.
Chuck. Fat kid. Let's call him Chuck, the more vulnerable.
Chuck is my biggest problem with this whole movie.
I have a problem with him too.
Okay, well, this Sarah, is my problem. Why is he your problem?
He was such a sweet kid. He like took on the role really well.
Yeah.
His actual function as a character, I got like he was supposed to bring the humanity to this
innocence.
Film. Yes, but why was he there? If this whole thing is they're trying to find the next generation of people who are immune, then you have to have people who are either exceptionally smart, exceptionally skilled, have something out of the ordinary that is allowing them to survive. That's why I understood I liked the sector vision of how like each person had their task, because it makes sense. They're like, oh, this person.
This is a hunter. This is a gatherer. This is
the nurturer.
And gardener. And they can be good. But Chuck? Like, I wanted him to be a super genius or something that proved that he could be the key to this society. He could be why people survive. And he didn't do that.
No, I agree.
That's why I question whether this whole thing's a lie. That's why I question whether what she's saying is she's literally just messing with them.
But I couldn't agree with you more.
Yeah, I think that's the reason why there were so many different male characters in this film. Because this whole project was to study the brain functions of different types of people.
But it was
supposed to be about people who had succeeded at
puzzles.
Exactly.
And they had to succeed in a way, whether it was power, whether it was intellect, whether it was leadership, whether it was some... You had to be able to navigate your way through these puzzles, and Chuck didn't prove to me any way he could.
But he knew
that's
how to
why he died, because he wasn't one.
But he shouldn't have even made it to the maze. This is after years.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Trials.
Is it?
But he was with people who could.
And my other problem, my other thing too, was I was thinking, is so we're supposed to have this touching moment when he hands over his little totem, and he goes, here, you know, find my parents. And I was like going, how the hell is he going to do that? Like, if you don't remember what the hell they look like, how's he going to know who the hell they are?
Because it's
parents.
Thomas, and Thomas is God.
How the hell is he going to do that? So when he gave it back, I was like, that was a smart point.
How are you
going to do that? It's like, you know what? That's
But then he gets
path.
It back.
So what are you going to do in your last moments of dying?
Earlier on.
But you have to know, as an active audience member, that little token is going to come back in another movie and in another book. Of course, we're going to see that. It's going to at some point be a hunt for his parents. There's got to be something more with that. But just sticking on Chuck's role for a second, I did want to say that I thought the actor did a very good job playing Chuck.
Sure.
I just think that he was kind of given a bum character.
Yeah.
But I did read also that Blake Cooper, who is the one who played Chuck, that the way he got his audition, because he really hasn't booked anything before, is that he was all through Twitter harassing the director, saying, I'm perfect for this role, I'm perfect for this role, and finally he sent in his audition tape. So that kind of, drive, I really appreciate, especially in somebody so young. I thought that was cool. And I did think he did a really good job, and I thought he fit the role. I just think that the role was a very strange
It's just a weird role. It just—he was just brought there to be sympathetic, and then die at the end so that you can go, oh. And again, the way he died too, like that was just—it made no sense. Like the only purpose of Gally ended up being so he can make it and kill Chuck.
Here's what I'm thinking,
and I think,
and that bothered me.
I think Chuck's death, because it was just so kind of out of the blue, but it just makes the whole bigger picture seem so wrong. Like, this, it's terrible what these people have done to these kids. The fact that they're all dying left and right, it just makes everything, the enemy, even a bigger problem. And I think that's the only reason
but
Chuck
was there.
But I have
no idea who
because,
their enemy is.
They're affecting the most innocent people, and that
Wicked
this
is
a
good.
Serious
there is no
thing.
Enemy. They, here's what I'm thinking.
Wicked pisser.
It makes the antagonist even a bigger antagonist.
But I don't know who the... See, and now I guess that's another problem. I don't know who necessarily the antagonist
and we will
is.
Find
I think
that
we're supposed
out
to assume,
second and third film.
I think we're supposed to assume it's the woman. But here's literally what I'm thinking at this point. And if you watch AfterBuzz TV, one of our sister networks, you know that I come up with crazy theories on things. Very crazy theories. So I get that this could be one of those. But I'm thinking that maybe Gally wasn't actually Gally. It was like an image of something that, because how they set up this whole staged whatever, and maybe Gally's still alive, and somehow they have to go back and get these kids.
Well, that's wishful thinking on your part, because he was your favorite character.
No, right? No, because I'm thinking, I mean, how are they not going to address at any point how Gally got out of the maze?
They didn't address anything else, so it wouldn't be a surprise.
You don't think in the second or third,
actually, Gally is more in line with the creator.
Yeah, or something like that. It was like an image, or they dropped a person, or he had a twin brother. Like,
let me ask you a question, Melissa, because this is another question I had of the movie, and maybe there was more explanation in the book. I don't know. The Grievers. Well, what the hell were they? Were they organic? Were they
mechanical?
Half mechanical. Who made them? Why? What are they part of?
And that also goes to show with just like how many projects are they working on to have this biochemically engineered mechanical machine creature thing that kills all these guys. So it was a mix of like actual technology along with mutation of a creature. And but also I did like
in the book
just the symbolism of the name of the Grievers that brings great grief upon people. And I thought that I was like, okay, Grievers bad. But the only question
I
is
also
just,
think they were done very well. I thought they were very scary.
Sure,
I thought
I
they moved well.
It reminded me of Falling Skies, sort of kind of the Reavers or whatever.
I was terrified of the Grievers only because they had
Reavers
arachnid properties to them.
Yeah, you hate the spider type.
I do not do characters. I like the first one. I'm like, oh my goodness! But once I saw them in like actual daylight, I was just like, okay, they're not that bad. They're just, and when you add the mechanical aspect to it, I was like, okay, they're more machine than
I
rather
big mechanical aspect.
You know?
I like the mechanical aspect.
I thought they were done well.
And can somebody tell me where the glades are and how did they get to be
the glade?
Yeah, I was like going.
The glade.
Okay,
in the
so we gotta come up because this elevator goes up. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the glade where everybody was living.
Yeah.
The center of the maze.
The center of, but who built that? Like, how did the glades, like, what are the glades?
Well,
like,
we find out it was all artificial staged because every time someone comes up in the box, quote unquote, that the creators also sent supplies up with food and all this stuff to keep sustaining their life and in the glades. So it's just like a lot of different things.
But if they can do that, it was? Because I couldn't figure that out because if
I thought they like gave them like seeds and then they like planted them.
We have to
know.
But it was an artificial stage.
It was an artificial stage, which is also confusing because we have to assume that they sent the girl. I don't know if they sent Thomas or if he like jumped in and did something, but we have to assume they sent the girl because she came up with the vials and with the note. This is the last one. So if that was the last one, were they just gonna let them all die?
I think the whole thing is they want some people to survive, but they need to eliminate some. Like, they need to narrow it down.
It's like Darwin's theory.
You thought she was there to populate? You thought she was there?
That was my initial thought, because why else would you?
I'm just saying,
look, if you're looking to perpetuate the species, they're all guys.
No. I think it was just to get people, you know, they wanted this change to happen. They wanted things to keep moving forward. And they needed a certain number of survivors to come out who were more inclined or...
I'm just saying that was my initial knee-jerk thing.
My
Why else would you send up a girl in a thing of guys if you're looking to perpetuate the species?
No, you know what my prediction is? We're getting to predictions now on our show.
Why were they all guys? No.
I don't know.
And that's the thing. I'll get into that. Because we haven't, none of us have read the second or third one, where we are literally just going off the movie right now.
Oh, yeah. But people who have read the books are, like, hating us right now.
What I got from the movie, we see Thomas and Teresa. They are working with the creators, but they have that mental note that, like, what we're doing is wrong. They have that conscious, like, this is immoral. And I felt like they knew something was going to happen to the creators, so they sent themselves down there to help get these guys out.
That's why would the creators go along with sending them down there? They didn't send themselves down there because the girl came with the vial and the note.
No, I don't think the creators, because it seems like Thomas and Teresa, they knew what was going on. They were going to rebel against the creators, and something happened to the creators because we saw that, like,
maybe
people were taking over.
Maybe there's one person on the inside, part of the creators, who's on their side.
Yeah, people maybe were taking that. Over the creators, and I think Thomas and Teresa found a way to send themselves into the maze to help these guys to get
Teresa
out.
Clearly didn't send herself in the maze because she came with the two vials and with the note. So if she came with the two vials and the note, she didn't send herself in. But Thomas, I think, might have sent himself in, and then Teresa convinced them to bring her in for some reason or whatever.
I
agree
with
you, Sarah.
The creator sent, or another thing is, like, maybe Thomas tried to rebel, and the creators weren't having that, and so they sent Thomas in as, like, a punishment, pretty much, like, no, we get rid of you, you're going into the maze, and then Teresa somehow found a way to get into the maze to help get Thomas out.
I agree that there's somebody on the inside, Sarah.
But for that to happen with Teresa, I mean, the only thing she... I mean, everybody who comes up from wherever the hell they come up from has lost their memory, okay?
But they get to keep their name.
Right, and, well, yeah. Which is weird. But... Teresa,
how?
Teresa comes up without her memory other than Thomas. She doesn't know anything else. Everything else she's forgotten, but Thomas.
She knows her
she
name.
She knows Thomas.
Okay, so
she
knows her
Teresa's
name.
Name
but
right.
She doesn't know. But again, if she's, there has to be a process that, how do you put yourself in that process and then know you have to go into that box and then hit the up button? No, I think she was definitely put in there.
Yeah. Either someone's on the inside or they sent her themselves.
Yeah, but
I don't think she sent herself out.
It's just very, very confusing. I think we're going to get answers.
Oh, maybe.
Yeah, volunteer. I think Thomas and Teresa, they knew what was going on. They knew what everything they were doing was immoral.
But why were they doing it then? Why? How did they become part of Wicked? When
they
were
there?
Are they kids or the grandkids?
This discussion is all pointing to is that this movie
didn't answer questions.
Well, it might be sufficient for a book reader because they know what's coming ahead. As a just the movie audience, it leaves people with far too many questions, far too many plot holes, and a little bit of a headache.
Yeah, I disagree.
I thought it was a little bit of a prologue, or we just watched. It would be like, I was thinking about this, it would almost be like if you started off the entire Star Wars saga by watching The Empire Strikes Back. So if you had no previous knowledge of who these people are, and then that movie ends on a cliffhanger, you'd sort of have an idea, but then you'd be like, well, what the hell? Like, there were, and again, I relate it to Lost because it's the kind of crap that Lost did every week, and they still didn't come up with answers through the end, but this had no answers at all.
Okay, well, here's first of all, I think that it was, you're thinking about it as Lost. The director pitched this when he said this is Lord of the Flies meets Lost, so you're right on target then.
I was like, this is so Lord of the Flies right now. Sure. All guys striving to survive.
I disagree, however, with the point that I get what you're saying, that this conversation brought you to that point, and this movie made you not really want to go see the second movie. I, on the other hand, have enough questions answered. I have a million questions. I have so many, but I love that. I'm thinking about all these theories. I love letting my mind run wild, and I'm so excited to see the second one.
It's just like every answer they gave me was bad.
Like, I don't care because I didn't get anything.
Bad in what way?
Bad in that, like, oh, this is what's going on with the Earth. These are the people who are the next generation. And then me being like, that's your next generation? Why? Like, stuff like that. It's
there
like
wasn't
they,
enough resolution.
No, they gave me an answer. The answer to this was, these people are in the maze because we need people who are genetically advanced.
Wait, can we
but
talk about
that
for a second?
Show me that they were genetically advanced.
So that's not this... Okay. I don't know if that was the sense that I got. let's talk about why these people are in the maze. They're in the maze, supposedly, whether this, if you go off the fact that this is truth. So let's just say what she was saying was truth. Because there's a virus that has infected the brain that they now is wiping out the population, but there's something about this generation that's able to fight the virus, and they're trying to test them with these games. Because they're more advanced. They're trying to test them with these games to figure out what it is.
They've been doing games for years. They've succeeded through them, and they went through the games, and now they have to put them in some sort of high-pressure situation where it's going to, where they can monitor their brain activity.
Okay.
Yes.
And, but this is our last best chance and hope for
humanity.
So why don't we create these monsters that can kill them off?
Why isn't
monsters that can kill off will whittle down to the ones it's who Darwinism. Really deserve.
Well, yeah, it is Darwinism. But then why isn't the woman's brain being flesh eaten? She's not part of the generation. What did you say her name was? Ava.
Ava. Yeah.
Why is she okay?
I don't know.
She just hasn't gotten the virus yet.
I don't know.
She's protected, or is she lying? And there is no, and the world is perfectly fine, and literally she's messing with everybody.
I don't know.
See, but if that's the answer, then I really don't want to watch.
But that's where the immoral questions lies. Like, why did they even start it? Were they at the beginning of the whole virus? Were they the ones that created the virus that wiped out half the humanity?
Well, didn't they say it was a, we got scorched
something
by
about the sun. Yeah.
They got scorched. Yeah, it was a solar flare, but I don't know. I was just like,
but
again,
even
I was
I don't
so
even
confused.
Believe that.
That's what I'm saying. How do I don't know. I don't know. But what I also, again, love about this movie is the fact that a lot of times we come into anatomy of a movie and we have discussions and they're great. And I'm not really trying to understand anything. I'm just like, oh, I love this movie. I want to share my thoughts. But I love that I'm confused and I'm asking you guys what's going on. And you guys are also confused and we can throw out things and whatever. Like, that's really what I feel like when a movie does something like that, where you're asking all of these questions. For me, I enjoy that. For you guys, maybe not so much.
I don't mind being confused in a movie so long as at the end of the movie, there's an end. Like, especially if we know going into this that this is the first of a trilogy. Okay. And they did a good job marketing this. Like, I knew going into this movie that A, it was a book. And that it was part of a trilogy.
And the second one's already slated to come out September 18th, 2015.
I do have to say, just to make this clear, because I don't know if I've made this clear yet, I thought that the ending was god-awful. I thought that the ending was abysmal. That's how I described it. I think that the ending was literally, I don't know what they were thinking. But I really enjoyed this movie anyway, so I'm on board. I'm ready for the next one. But yeah, I mean, the ending, I don't know why. I don't know why.
I thought, again, when we saw Patricia Clarkson come up again, and I was like, oh, okay, I'm finally going to figure out where we're headed and why all this happened. She shoots herself, and then when she shows up again, I was like, what the hell just happened? Like, what's happening here and why? And then.
Would you rather her have shot herself and then not come back? Yeah. Would that have given you more answers?
No, movie didn't give me answers at all.
She's the one that, again, gives the exposition. But to off yourself out and to give an exposition not enough to have the audience members still understand what's going on, we have to have her come back to explain more. So, I mean, I'm actually glad that they brought her back.
But she didn't explain
more. I'm fine with
her
bringing her back. It just, I didn't get, it would have been fine if, like, her initial exposition speech was completely false, and then we got the real one behind the cameras when she came back. I'd have been like, oh, that was you messing with. Okay. This is what I really know.
Right, but now we know nothing.
But now, like, she came back and, like, kind of told us a little bit and kind of didn't and kind of, like, was like, oh, they are still hopeful.
And then you had,
it, like, was
everything's
like,
going to change.
And then you had the helicopter guy. It's like, oh, this is a good thing.
Yeah,
she's at the helm of all.
I was like,
this.
What is going on?
As Sarah massages her face, the headache is seeping in.
No, I had the same headache. I walked out of that movie going, and again, the set pieces I thought were fine. They worked. The maze running itself.
I will say the technical aspects of this film were amazing. We will definitely get into this. I think we're all at the question. We're just questioning the actual storytelling.
Yeah. No, right. Questioning.
Talking about the storytelling, can we talk about the individual characters a little bit, or are we doing that?
Sure.
Let's do that. I mean, okay. You already heard my beef with Changing Galley and LB.
You already heard my beef with Chuck.
And then you heard how much I love Galley. The person that I had the biggest issue with acting-wise was... The character's name is Minho, I think.
Played by Ki Hong Lee.
So I recently learned from one of our engineers here, Alexis told me that he is a YouTube star. I didn't know that he was a YouTube star, but I know that when I was looking on IMDb and whatnot, he really hadn't booked anything big before. To me, there was just nothing going on. There was nothing more to it. He was very, like, straightforward, and I couldn't see the wheels turning. Did anybody else have a problem with him?
I think he was not my favorite.
Yeah. I liked and disliked him. I liked him because he was the most informational one about the actual maze. And he mm-hmm.
Yeah, but that's a character thing, not
No. He explained the things that we as an audience needed to know, what the maze runner's job is, what he's been doing his whole time there.
Sure.
That I liked. The thing I didn't like about it was how vulnerable and weak of a person he was. He was kind of a wimp. Every time he went to the maze, and he did not come across brave or courageous and whatnot. I'm like, how the heck did you even become a runner in the first place?
When
you're going to be facing against grievers and going into a completely mind-boggling maze.
And then all the other runners quit, too.
Yeah, I had
to be stuck there
too.
The night with Thomas, and you're running away like a little, biatch. How the heck did you even become a runner in the first place?
Yes.
What I was trying to say, like, a runner should have the Thomas sensibility of, like, the reason why the runners is you're physically fit to do it. You have a brave sensibility, and you can work out, like, problems like a maze, like a puzzle like that.
Right.
And if you have to do that, like, you've got to be someone who has the fortitude to be able to do that.
You're somebody who wants
away.
To go skydiving. Right. You're somebody who wants to do all these things.
Yes.
And this is my problem with this also. You know, when we see Albie and he's hurt and he's getting carried by this character and everybody's like, and Thomas is like, we got to go help. And they're like, we can't enter the maze. Literally, if two of them had just run in and grabbed him, then they could have just gotten him out. Like, what do you mean, like, we can't enter the maze? Is there a force field? And where are these runners now? Go sprint in and get him. That's your job.
But see, that's a Gabby thing because they set up
Galley,
these rules.
Gabby,
I'm sorry.
Gabby. You're fine.
Goober.
Galley.
I love Galley.
I apologize.
Galley's my
Galley.
Homie.
See, Galley was so stringent and so dead set on the rules that maybe Albie had set up. Albie set up from the beginning. But was Albie a runner?
Albie was
not
a runner.
Well, right,
so what the hell
was
he doing in the
maze? Because Albie can do whatever he wants because he was the first one. And they said...
in the book, Albie was the asshole character.
Right.
He's
I know.
Controlling
what I'm talking about.
Everybody.
All right, so... Was Galley a runner in the book?
No.
No.
But Galley wasn't in the maze. I guess he was because he came out
end.
And left his twin.
Yeah.
Which you can't count it out.
Oh, my hair hurts.
You can't count it out.
Okay, can we talk about Newt a little bit? I like him a lot. Newt is adorable.
He was probably my favorite.
Yeah, he was sensible when he said, right, you need to be punished, we'll do this, but then you also should be rewarded. I just was like, oh, Newt, you get it, man.
He gets, and again,
he knows what's
like
right and what's wrong.
Right, and he knows there's a gray area. It's like, if we got a guy who can try to figure this out, let's give him the support to do that. I also find that it's funny that apparently a majority of the actors and actresses were British, of British descent, yet he was the only one to keep his accent.
Yeah, I was talking to Sarah about that.
That's sort of kind of funny to me.
I think it's because, at least when I look at this cast, the two names that I'm most familiar with are Thomas Brody Sangster and Dylan O'Brien, and how I know Thomas from Game of Thrones, in which he does have an accent, and it's known for having a European cask, or they're very heightened language.
He's
an
established.
So that's part of who he is. So I think it's not distracting that you have a British actor.
Oh no,
versus some of the other kids. If you did turn this into like a British movie,
I get it. It's a little bit multicultural too.
Yeah.
They seem to have like different backgrounds.
Poulter.
But it was ironic, and even he in an interview pointed
out
that that
is
funny.
Is I know from. The Millers,
in
which he has a very American accent.
Sure.
So I understand why they would want to keep that up and not be distracted with bringing in the British element.
Right.
And
speaking of,
I I didn't mind the fact that Newt, the character Thomas Brody Sangster, that he had the British accent. It just goes to show, like, it's all different kind of people that they're throwing into the
movie. I was just throwing it out there for... No. It's not that it was anything that bothered
me. It was just interesting. It was an interesting point.
I just find that he even pointed out the irony that he goes, hey, I'm here and I'm the only one that got to keep my accent. And that was pretty funny. So I just... I was like, oh, damn it. Like, they stifled those accents. Damn it. I love that accent so much. I could see a whole room of accents.
It's like if next week we were like, Everyone here is bringing a British accent, except for Marissa. You can keep your accent.
It's just awkward.
Yeah.
It's interesting.
It was just funny that he found it ironic, and I found it funny too. It's just like an interesting movie fact.
Speaking of British actors who were playing American, I suppose. What did you guys think about the only woman, Teresa? I mean, what did we think about her?
If you can't get Kristen Stewart.
Seriously,
yes.
I thought the exact same thing. She had the exact same characteristics and mannerisms as Kristen Stewart. Even the open mouth. I'm like, why did you have a problem getting Kristen Stewart?
I thought that was so interesting. However, I like her infinitely more than Kristen Stewart, so I'm very glad we went with her instead. Kristen Stewart is like just about the most annoying actress I think of all time. Sorry, that's really harsh, but she bothers me. Her mannerisms bother me.
Well, we just lost another fan. I heard she watches us religiously.
But like, I'm not going to go against Kaya, I believe that, or Kaya.
Kaya Scodelario.
Who played Teresa. My only question is,
I thought she was
they
good.
Changed Teresa's character in the movie from the book a lot.
Did they?
Because Teresa in the book is very strong. She's headstrong kind of character. She helps fighting off all the grievers and whatnot.
I think she really helped.
But in the movie, they really, like, brought down her character and diminished it, and she was just, unfortunately, just the girl who just was stuck there.
Two things about the book that I wanted to ask you that something about her being in a coma, and B, telepathy.
Yeah.
They completely dropped the telepathy aspect in the movie, which I don't mind, because I don't know how they would portray that. There's so many things that's already going on that I don't think it would have been executed
well. It would have probably made
me
more confused.
Yeah.
But
I don't think it would have been executed well.
But it would have made me think they were twins.
When you say the thing about a coma, I'm assuming... When you say the thing... Yeah, I wonder if they're siblings or whether they're dating. I don't know. But when you say the thing about the coma...
Thomas, Teresa, the names are very similar. So it begs the question, you know,
are they siblings?
Twins?
Absolutely. And they did have the same nose. So, which is just something I noticed. You asked the question about the coma. I'm assuming you're talking about you read something on IMDb or on a list of...
Yeah, I found this thing called... Five Things We Loved About the Movie. And they were comparing it to the book. And one of them was, apparently, her character was in a coma. In the book.
See, was that the time that she was still knocked out?
Marissa would be the one to ask this.
That's why I was asking.
That's my question, because I do admit, like, there's a lot that happens in the book, and which gets explained more in the second.
Yeah, because it says here, Teresa doesn't spend time in a coma. Teresa's coma was a source of mystery and suspense in the novel as the author introduced a new character, a girl, no less. And then left us without any answers to our innumerable questions, which I feel the movie did the same thing. This worked well in the book because this became a tipping point for Thomas when he truly began to realize a lot more what was going on than he initially thought. So
I don't know.
And also from the film aspect, they changed around a lot of the scenes, the actual order of how things happen. Because in the movie, Teresa came fairly later, more so in the middle of the movie. In the book, she came almost immediately after Thomas.
Oh, like, really?
Yeah, one or two.
So it was 2 days
day,
versus 3 days, I think is what I read.
One day, like, passed in the book. So, and then, because in the film, Thomas became a runner, and then Teresa came. In the book, Teresa came, and then Thomas became a runner.
Speaking to the Teresa aspect as a character and as a strong female character, I think that actually the scenes were there. I just don't think that they were given a ton of the attention. My examples of this are like one when she's throwing all of the stuff down from the
that
tower.
Was a fun scene.
I'm sure there was more than that. Like how she got away from them, how she ended up there, like all this stuff that established her as resourceful,
yeah,
and as smart And as
you mean in the book, there was more.
I don't know. And as a force to be reckoned with. Like, she had the machete, she had her fruit, she got up the tower. Obviously, something, how that happened is interesting.
Yeah.
On top of that, she was the one who threw, like, the fire alcohol
and at the griever.
Right.
And when she was as an offering, she kicked the guy right in the balls.
Yeah. And it's just like, it was there. It was there, but it wasn't like a huge attention. Like
it wasn't played.
It wasn't. we didn't get the lines or the things being like, she's right. different. She's one of us. She helps as much. Did you see what she did? There was no like actual like good job.
Yeah,
we got no. She got no recognition. For her. Like the scenes were there, the actions were there. If you were right. looking for them, but it wasn't. It wasn't really pointed out. It was like, is this what all girls are like?
No.
They wanted to be, it should have been like, wow, this person's amazing. Like, she can kick our ass, you know?
Well, I felt that she was capable enough to handle herself.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but they didn't, again, within the context of this movie, they didn't give her or really anybody, like, I couldn't figure anybody else out. I couldn't figure
you
what
mean
the hell.
The lack of character arcs?
Lack of everything, yes. I mean, arcs, they weren't even bows. Like, they were, I was just trying, I wanted something. I wanted to, like, who really is our protagonist? Who is our antagonist? Who are they fighting against? Like, and why are the glades, and how did they get
how
there? And why can't everybody
them?
Live at the glades
how have
if
they
have
changed?
Water and like,
what
they
have they learned?
Plants?
Who are they as people?
I agree enough that the arcs weren't completely there. Another thing that we briefly touched upon that I'm gonna have an issue with is I am seeing sexual tension between these two characters, and if they end up being siblings and I'm like rooting for them to make out, we're gonna have a problem.
Well, I have Luke and Leia.
Luke and Leia. Totally.
Yep.
Luke and Leia. But that would make, I mean, for siblings, you're gonna have that natural attraction towards each other, so that makes sense in the.
What?
Not in the sexual way, but like as a person.
Come again.
Okay, no. Oh my god. As a person. You have that natural attraction towards, like, this, you know, similarities.
Sorry. I just can't get on the page that you're on.
She's saying...
This is an anatomy of a body.
Okay, I think what we're getting at... Can we go with a bond instead of attraction?
Attraction, bond.
Let's go with there's an innate bond between siblings.
But you brought up the names, Thomas and Teresa, and how they are
similar. They're very similar.
So... I didn't even look at them as siblings until we brought it up here in this conversation, because I actually thought, because the way that they were via the flashback, it looked more like there was a bond. It wasn't brotherly, sisterly bond.
They were looking at each other through the glass.
Through the glass, yes.
It's
and
like Great Gatsby.
I sort of felt... Yeah, you're. I mean, I didn't see them as siblings.
And if they end up being siblings,
And if they were, say, what do they call them? Fraternal twins, where you have twins that look like Luke and Leia. Like maybe there is that. Maybe that's why there was
the telepathy. Thank you. That's how you.
Maybe that's why there was that in the books. But they never had it in the movie, so we'll throw that
That's
out.
Weird.
Because I don't know what's going on between them. I don't know what's going on with any of the characters.
Make out.
Okay, you know what? Let's talk about the cinematography and the editing. The overall, visually, this movie was stunning.
Wait, I absolutely agree. Just one more thing on characters before we move on is that I thought Thomas did an amazing job. I thought
he was
great. None of us mentioned him. I thought he did a great job.
And he almost didn't get the role.
Yeah, right.
Wes Ball didn't want to... Because
of his haircut.
Because of his hair.
Yeah, he was too... Whatever.
He was fine. You know, I didn't really have an issue with performance, in the movie at all. I just had... It was more of the characterizations and the script.
I think I liked Thomas more in the film than it did in the book, honestly, because in the book, yes, we know that Thomas' character, he's very curious and he's asking all the questions that the audience are asking.
Yeah,
but in the book, it came across as a really annoying child in a way. You know,
really?
When like a little toddler would be asking an adult why this, why that. When I was reading the character of Thomas, it was very much in the same way. It's just like, okay, now you're just.
That's a good question. Then I'm gonna ask: was there an age disparity from book to screen? Like, were they younger in the novels?
No, they're the same age.
Like Game of Thrones.
No, because in the book, I believe they're teenagers, and in the film they're 16. So got very it. Teenager.
Okay.
Sorry, but we can move on. I just wanted to say that I thought he was great.
But I just, yeah, just to finish that off, I liked how Thomas, he asked enough questions to the point where everyone else already there were just giving us the answers that we were asking. Okay. Directing and the cinematography, sure. Visually well done.
Absolutely.
I liked the different aspects between the film, between the maze, which was grand, humongous, mm-hmm. all those walls, mm-hmm. scary.
Yeah. And I like the different sections. Yes. Yeah. Also, not only just, I don't even think it can be really divided into the maze and the glade. I really think it's the glade, the first section of the maze, the Absolutely. Second section of the maze.
Yeah.
And then the home of the grievers. I thought that they're very distinct. You could mm-hmm. easily tell where they were running through.
Mm-hmm.
And that
the blades,
they all looked awesome.
I agree with that. I thought that it was really well done. You're talking about the direction. What I do think is really interesting about this movie is how little experience people on this project had. Like, this was a very inexperienced yeah. group of motley crew.
As the I writing was inexperienced.
Yeah, well, you know, it's
that mainly the that. You're talking about the director.
The screenwriters, all of them, the director. I'm talking. And a lot of the actors, too. Just the whole lot of them. Very inexperienced, which we are seeing more and more of recently, as I was talking about with Monsters to Godzilla. You know, we're using directors that aren't like these huge name directors. I thought that he did a very good job. I did think he did a really good job. It's interesting to me that he was given this job. I know he went in to pitch turning his short into a feature, and then they offered him this instead.
Which Fox bought the feature, his short, as well.
Right.
And the trend in Hollywood, whatever the bottom line is, it's all dollars and cents.
Right.
It's mm-hmm. like, hey, we can pay you in pesos mm-hmm. because you really want to direct.
Right.
And so you'll direct, and, you know, and I think he did a good job.
Yeah.
You know, and he comes from an art department background. You know, it's interesting to me that they are giving these young directors
a shot.
Well, they're giving them a shot. They're giving them a budgeted movie, too.
Yeah.
Like, this isn't like an independent film, which is good and bad in a way, because I sort of kind of get the sense that, you know, when you look at some of our great directors, they all started off sort of kind of small.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Spielberg started off on TV, you know, before, you know, he did Duel, just a TV movie. Then he did Sugarland Express, and nobody knew at the time what Jaws was going to turn out to be. But even George Lucas with THX 1138, all these things, when you look at, they all started off, even James Cameron started off with Roger Corman.
Yeah.
So you cut your teeth on certain things, and sort of kind of like, at least with Gareth Edwards and giving him Godzilla, he had made a feature film.
Yeah.
Like, he made a feature film. Like, this guy made a short. And I'm just trying to, I'm looking up, this was a $35 million budgeted movie. And to sell it on a short, look, I have no, I'm not saying don't, you know, was he did a good job. But it's, what a risk for me if you're, you know, and all in all, you're going in $70 million. Okay, so that means basically you're hoping that this
and that's
works
on this one movie, and they're going to use him on the other ones too.
Yeah.
So it's not just going, you know, it's investing in somebody for a franchise film. That's a really big deal.
Fox is very interesting. Oh, go ahead. Sorry.
No, keep going. This is a sidetrack because I think we're talking a lot about, yes, we have Wes who is inexperienced. I think a lot of what makes this movie seem like big budget and seems it makes it look amazing is actually the special effects team.
Yes.
And who's involved in there
mm-hmm.
and the companies they used, and I'm sure the people they brought from those companies were very experienced.
Clearly.
Yeah. No, like, and Dan Zimmerman is an editor, is an experienced editor. You know, I mean, it's one thing to hold everybody as inexperienced, but I like it when you surround yourself with talented people.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I talked about this with Harold Ramis as a director. He said, I didn't know how to direct. I just had everybody else around me was better than mm-hmm. me. And I would always go to them, where do I put a camera? And they're like, are you sure you want to put the camera there? So you have to rely on that. And he had a good crew.
And so much of this movie, at least the parts that I liked about it, were the suspenseful parts. Were the them running through the maze? Were them dealing with these? It was a lot of the chase scenes. The chase scenes are what kept me going. And if you think about it, what makes a good chase scene is what you're looking at.
Mm-hmm.
Is the music? Is the timing? Is the editing? And that is the
support who is chasing.
Yeah. Like, but that's the support team. So yes, we got
We got a new director, a newer director. We got newer screenwriters. And, but like, my biggest problems come from the writing and the storytelling. My things I liked most come from the team of people who made it look and sound good.
Yeah, no, the least of my problems in this movie were the technical aspects of it. And even the direction. Like, again, and one of my favorite scenes was the gates. I forget what they're called.
The blades.
The blades. Yeah, the blades. Like, that was a really well
done scene. And they're all closing, and they're running by each other. That was really cool.
And yeah, and they're running. And again, to get the selection of shots. And this is where special effects, this is where editing, but directing too. Because he knew, and of course, I'm sure they pre-vised it out. It's like, okay, I want a shot from here. Then I'm going to need a crane shot from up top, and I want these things to be turning in a certain way. And then he's going to, at the very last second, he's going to have to come on through so they're in the same path. So, you know, a lot of that is directing. A lot of it could be special effects.
I mean, we're not in this team. We don't know if it's like, hey, this is what I wanted. And they were like, but we made you something better.
Yeah, it
could be. But I'm thinking that a director is going to have a good idea of what he wants. The other scene that I thought was pretty cool was, I think it was the first time Thomas went into the maze and came across a griever that was chasing him, and he was like running on top of the
and he almost
like, you know, I thought like that scene was pretty cool, and even the stuff in the glades
that was
terrifying. When all the grievers came out from all angles attacking the glades, I thought, you know, that was pretty good too.
Even the less action moments where he like rolled under the vines, and after he like had wrangled Albie up and then like hid under the thing, and we first see the Griever walk past, I thought that was all really, really interestingly done. I thought it was great.
Yeah.
Do you guys think, because Catherine Hardwick, who is the director from Twilight and 13, she was the one who was originally set to direct this. Do you guys think she would have done a different, a better, a worse, a whatever kind of job?
I don't think she would have done any better or worse, to be honest. I don't think she, I mean, no offense to her.
I think some aspects would have been different. Maybe the storytelling direction would have been portrayed more clearer in that way, and then some, like, one thing would have been elevated and another thing would have been probably diminished. Yeah.
It'd have been interesting to see how she would handle the more suspense aspect of this film. It's obviously based on a book. She's obviously good with dealing with adapting material and having fans. It would have been interesting to see her timing and her perspective on how to, like, introduce the grievers, on how to, like, portray all of the scarier elements, because Twilight's not scary at all.
Yeah, no, I get it.
Or to differentiate, like, all the characters in and of themselves, because each of them, we got the names of, like, the main five people, and then everybody else was just there.
Who are the main five people?
Even
in this movie?
Thomas, Albie, Chuck.
Newt, Thomas, Teresa.
Galley,
seven. Yeah, just like five to seven people. We had the main cast. Then everyone else, even in the book, like, they just had nicknames. They're like nicknames that even a reader probably wouldn't remember, like weird, random, like pet names, like Shank, Dog, like Granny. I mean, Granny is just the nickname for someone who's the most green, the newest newbie. But everyone else, like all the other boys, were literally names, nicknames to not give them any personification, like, or any humanity.
Yeah, well, like, you know, as far
they're expendable.
As Catherine Hardwick.
Right? Yeah.
I mean, in all honesty, her Twilight, she did the first one, right? I believe she did the first Twilight. Yeah, she didn't gain any great reputation off of that, because that, from what I understand, is the worst directed of the entire series. They traded up after she took a lot of flack, actually, for working on for the first Twilight movie. And I think she did the first Twilight movie.
2008.
Yeah, so, I mean, I don't know. The guy who directed it, Wes, I think he did a good job. He had good people around him. You know, I was going to say, too, another job of a director.
He had an amazing cinematographer.
Oh, absolutely.
Enrique Chediak.
Yeah.
Who's worked on so many great films.
Yeah, and
including, like, Slumdog Millionaire.
Yeah, he's worked with Danny Boyle. I mean, he has a good sensibility as well. But a director, too, also has to work really well with actors. See, and that's another thing. Like, again, I didn't have some of the performance issues. I thought the performances were pretty good. And when you're dealing with kids, and some of them are new kids... Like, you know, you
a lot
have
of them
to have,
are new kids.
Yeah, and you have to have a strong director to sort of, I mean, he's got to be the headmaster. And he's got to reel them in, and he's got to get a good performance out of them. And, you know, I mean, Fox, look, Fox wants a franchise out of this. So,
and they're going to get it. Yeah.
They're going to get it.
Yeah. And, but you know, the funny thing about this is there was a, well, let's talk about budgets and we'll talk about a little bit before I go into this. So we're talking about a $70 million budget all in.
Yes.
So this means 35 mil for the production. So another 35 mil for the advertising and the hard drive distribution, posters and all that. So it opened up number one at the box office, but it opened up with 32.5 million.
Mm-hmm.
So when you're looking at the most
recent... to all the other September films that are currently out right now, that's actually really good.
Yes, but compared to other blockbusters, no. I'm only going to compare it to... I'm going to compare Oranges to Oranges.
Yeah.
And I'm going to say compare it to the most recent crop of young adult novels that have been made into movies is very on the low end. It's it's not close to what Divergent did. It's not close to what Hunger Games did. And, you know, their total gross is around 40 million, 40 plus. Their worldwide box office is 90. So again, I think that maybe like Fox is looking more for the international audience because 40 million, I mean, we'll see how it does this weekend. You know, we have a rated R movie coming out, a heavy R, and then we have a G or PG rated kids family friendly movie. So it'll be interesting to see how it comes out. Now, I did find an amazing article that was in Forbes magazine. And basically it says, does Maze Runner mark the beginning of the end of the young adult craze? And they talk about the gross and what and how it relates to even like. Like it did 33 million and according, and that would give us the biggest opening of any movie since August 8th, which is Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, which brought in $65 million.
But okay. Also, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles is a very established franchise that's been out for decades.
This is what I'm going to say. If you look at the top, I believe it's the top five young adult adaptations. We just, I was talking about this the other day. Three, I believe, like Harry Potter series is number one.
Oh, yeah.
But, and then I believe it might even go to Twilight next, or around there. But the next three are Divergent, Hunger Games, and Fault in Our Stars.
Oh, so good.
And if you look at that, three of Fault in Our Stars just came out, and two of the other ones are still in the middle of their series. So I don't think it really...
Fault in Our Stars is a series?
No, but no, it's an individual. But yeah, it's winning. But it's in the top five young adult adaptations.
This is saying it went Harry Potter series, then went The Hunger Games, then To Kill a Mockingbird, Fault in Our Stars, The Hobbit, Catcher in the Rye.
Young adult adaptations won't include To Kill a Mockingbird.
Okay. So just Harry Potter, Hunger Games. Fault in Our Stars.
Fault in Our Stars,
I was
Twilight.
Lord of the Rings.
But what I'm saying is that the article's saying this is the end of the young adult adaptation, or could be.
Well, it's saying, could it mark the beginning? And it's funny that you say...
I'm saying that I don't think so yet, because we still have two huge moneymakers in the middle of production.
No, but here's the thing.
And there's always books
being
written.
And here's what it's saying is that... When you look at it, Maze Runner is the biggest seller, accounting for more than 50% of early ticket sales. But to put that number into perspective, $33 million isn't fantastic opening weekend, especially for a movie that has franchise potential. Divergent earned $54 million opening weekend. The first Hunger Games movie earned $152 million. So we know that... We know that Hollywood is like always chases trends, right?
But also a question to add to that. Is it because of the star power that helped add to... that, you know, the great opening weekends for those films?
I don't think for Hunger Games. I think that was the beginning of a lot of careers.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Wait, but keep going. I want to hear what you're saying.
Okay, so, you know, a movie like Maze Runner feels like the same old thing if you haven't read the book, especially hitting theaters on the heel of yet another dystopic future film, The Giver. Despite legions of loving fans, that film has earned just $25 million at the global box office. With a $25 million budget, it still may turn a profit, but unlikely to do sequels. Now, you mentioned Fault of Our Stars.
Fault in Our Stars, yep.
Fault in Our Stars, okay, was a young adult adaptation, but that movie only cost $12 million to make, okay? And it has earned $300 million at global box office. So when you're looking about the profitability, now... You're not going to sequelize Fault in Our Stars, okay?
And that's the there would be nothing one film out of right. all of those franchises that doesn't have special effects in it. It's not an action movie.
At all. But the other one that it goes, spoiler alert, don't expect a sequel. Okay, the other movie, If I Stay, another film that deals with teen and death, has earned $60 million on a tiny $11 million budget. Mm-hmm. So what this is going, although studios crave franchises, a smaller movie made for the right budget can still turn a nice profit. There's nothing wrong with that.
And perks of being a wallflower.
Yeah, and I like where the article is going because, again, it's sort of kind of saying... We can sort of kind of go back, like we don't, you know.
I just think you can make both if you make them well.
If you make them well. And
there's a time and place for each of them.
It sort of surprised me that they came out so soon with an announcement that they were going to make a sequel to Maze Runner with only $35 million weekend gross. But it leads me to believe that they're paying more attention to foreign gross, that they're not necessarily making it for us here in the States.
Worldwide, this movie right now... As of September, it's already at the 90 million.
Yeah,
mark.
It's like that's 90 million.
Well, it makes sense, and especially for the format of this movie.
Right.
I'm curious what you guys think about. I know we have mixed opinions on whether you feel like going to see the sequel right now, but let's be honest, we're all going to go see the sequel. That's what we do.
If we're going to talk about it, yes.
I think
I'm
we
not,
have
I'm
to understand.
Exactly.
To it.
If we're talking about it, I'll see it.
The difference is you, Roxy, you want to see this. We, I believe, and I'm not to speak for everyone, but it feels like we have an obligation to see the second one. It was like begrudgingly.
Okay, so anyway, though.
Will you read the next book?
I probably will for better clearance.
I hold nothing of this movie against the book.
And will you read the book before, within the year? Yes, because it's going to be a year.
So, okay. Anyway, though, I'm just looking at this. I have no knowledge of the second book or of the second movie. It's called The Scorched Trials, and here is what it says on IMDb as its tagline. It says... Here's what it says on IMDb as a tagline. It says, the main kids have escaped, but now they face an even more treacherous challenge on the open roads of a devastated planet. So at the end of this movie, we did see this, like, weird structural thing.
Destroyed city.
So I'm assuming
destroyed
that's a devastated planet. That planet, I'm assuming, is Earth, because that's where this takes place, if I'm not wrong.
Could be Planet of the Apes.
Totally. I mean, are we just going to see the same movie again?
It's a different location. Scorch.
There's going to be a lot of fire.
I think we're led to believe they're going to be dealing with fire mazes compared to an actual...
I think they're going to be dealing
just
with
like
battles.
But
we are
going to
need...
Fire trials.
Here's what we need. We need... answers. The second movie, we cannot wait till the third movie for answers. We need the second movie to start with something.
And would you agree that a second movie, a second book, right? Part of a trilogy. We
know
are conditioned, but we are conditioned that the second is going to end on a cliffhanger.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we're always. I mean, that's the way we're conditioned.
Because the first one ended on a cliffhanger,
right? Well, in everything,
and in general,
you know, in general,
the second movie always ends on a cliffhanger.
Second,
it's
in
so
the
hard
in a trilogy.
Though. It's very difficult though, because if you compare this to Hunger Games, which theoretically you should very easily compare this to Hunger Games, because they are both trilogies and they both are like bizarre circumstances, but they happen on Earth. You know what I mean? It's like real people in
dystopian
crappy situations. So. If you look at this compared to Hunger Games, I mean, I'm just the biggest Hunger Games fan. I love Hunger Games so much. This doesn't touch it with a candle.
No, it doesn't.
But if you don't compare it, I think that it was a decent movie that I really enjoyed.
But I will go with this with Hunger Games. And not that I'm like the hugest Hunger Games fan, especially when it comes to the books, because I hated the third book so much. But at least in Hunger Games, at least in the first two movies and in the first two books, they gave me a character with it. She was female, and I didn't care.
They also created the world.
And you knew what was going on.
But they created a character. They created a protagonist that I could follow. And it doesn't matter.
And an antagonist.
Right. And it doesn't matter whether that character is male or female. They built a strong character who I'm going to follow that I know that I'm going to be going through.
Don't you guys think that Sarah should be Katniss for Halloween? Keep going.
Sure.
Yes.
I don't think that Maze Runner had that.
No. And that's the
you wouldn't
difference.
Follow Thomas?
The Maze Runner had two established groups. We had Hunger Games. Goodness, Hunger Games had two established groups. We had the people at the Capitol. We know that they're the bad ones. We're not rooting for them. And we had the people
down with
in
government.
All the districts who are fighting for their lives. They're the ones that we're rooting for. They're two separate things. And then Maze Runner, we just had these groups of people that we're rooting for. And we don't really know who the big bad is. So
rooting for necessarily. And
you weren't rooting for Thomas? No, you didn't feel like you were rooting for him? Oh, I was so rooting for that kid. So dreamy. You know.
Well, there you have it. So we should leave on that. But I think another interesting thing to say, because we're talking about budgets and we're talking about franchise. But one thing that I do find interesting is that on Rotten Tomatoes,
yes,
63%.
Cinema Score
is A-.
A-. What do we think of that?
Doing really well.
That's a huge discrepancy.
I don't think it's like it's not so much a huge discrepancy from critic to. I mean, we've seen bigger discrepancies from a critic point of view to a cinema score point of view. But what we are looking at is there who is cinema score polling that's coming out of the movie and like you know and I'd love to know that the breakdown is not that I mean again a good movie should be a good movie. I'm just curious, you know, I was even more shocked to find out that it was a 63%. We just did a movie just prior to this. This Is Where I Leave You, where it was in the rotten.
Yep. And 43%.
That was 43%. And we're like, what the hell are they doing? And so
this is a completely different
audience
film.
Score, by the way, on Rotten Tomatoes is 79.
Yeah.
IMDb for this movie is 7.6.
Yeah.
Currently.
Which is fascinating to me. And it also goes to, like, even the critics. Like, what about... We talked about, and this is where I leave you, critics hate everything. And I'm wondering, like, if I walked out of this movie, and I was like, this thing has plot holes. And I talked about what I had problems, my issues with This Is Where I Leave You. On this one, what are they not missing? Like, what? How do they give us 63%, which I think is still in fresh? Like, it's just weird to me.
Oh, it definitely is still.
I
think that
demographics are who are watching those films.
Yeah, but
so what are you giving this? What are you giving this?
Oh, I give this a 1.5.
Like, out of what?
4. It made me angry.
Ooh, and we don't want to make you angry.
I think what people are liking about this film is that technically and visually, it was executed very well.
I really liked it.
Storyline, not so much.
That's what I guess. That's what I always go for. We should. And I can forgive. I mean, I'm looking at. We talked about This Is Where I Leave You. Regardless of its screenplay and its and what I thought, it was entertaining and I thought it had charm.
I had a harder time with that movie than I did with this.
See, this movie just like the plot holes, the contrivances, all this stuff bothered me.
I had problems with both.
Okay.
I also have problems with both, but I have bigger problems with that. Although the genres are so different that is apples and oranges.
Again,
for sure.
I'm not comparing genres. I'm just talking about quality of a movie. Like in this movie, again, we were all talking how it doesn't make any. I'm just talking about the. I'm not comparing genres. I'm just saying this movie. We just talked about how it's confusing, how it's not standalone, how it's plot holes to drive a ton of buses through.
Okay, to add to that, in fairness, This Is Where I Leave You is one book. It's an individual, it's not part of a franchise. This one is. And we know that there are more books, more story to add to that, so I can understand why this movie would still leave it very, very open-ended. I have a lot of plot holes that we wouldn't understand. I get it as a movie, individually, it should have had a beginning, middle, end.
But
this movie didn't
that
have
is
that.
Yes. That's the part that we need to focus on, because I get that it is from a book and I'm not going to know everything, but I have watched so many franchises, so many TV shows based off books, so many everything that are based off books that don't leave me leaving the theater going, nope, don't want to know that much more.
Yeah.
Yep. And that's how this one left me.
Yeah, I left and really, I could care less when
so
the sequel
I think
comes out.
This is when we agree to disagree.
Maybe.
So long. Farewell.
Thanks for all the fish.
But the overall critic ratings from everybody in as a whole is pretty
It's doing
positive.
Pretty well. Yeah, it's doing pretty well.
And that's what I'm sort of baffled
this
at.
This movie is going to make
its
money.
Technology, I guess.
Yes.
I guess.
Well, it already has made its money.
Yeah, this movie is making its money and it's going to make more. Do we think the second and third film is going to do better than
I'm very one. Nervous. I'm very nervous about the second film.
The second one's already slated.
If
it got an A-, that means that those A-, they're going to go for the second one.
No. I'm just nervous about the content of the second movie. Same. Like I'm saying, if they're waiting to the third to really let me know what's going on, mm-hmm. I'm not into that. I'll hold off, baby. I will hold off till the second, but I need to know. Give me something.
Yeah.
So I'm excited for it, but I'm nervous.
Yeah.
Okay. One thing I did love about this film to mm-hmm. just wrap it up, the music and the sound editing.
Oh yeah.
So well done. Those grievers were scary as all hell.
Yeah.
I didn't know what the hell they were.
I would not want to be chased by
the hell they were built. Like, why did you want to do that? But yeah, no. Again, the technical aspects of this movie, I didn't really take much issue with. I thought it looked fine, and I liked the set pieces that were brought up on the big screen. Now, I did see this too, in the XD format, and it did look amazing. I mean, when they showed those wide shots from the glade, and you saw the maze, the wall,
Did any
amazing.
Of you see this in IMAX?
I didn't. I saw it in the XD. That's as close as the IMAX.
Party foul.
Party
all Dimitri ever does is see it in IMAX.
That's all I do.
I mean, come on, Dimitri.
Well, XD.
All right. XD is good. But overall, I think we all had a lot of problems with the storytelling, how they executed that visually. Yes, spot on.
Yeah.
Story writing, screenwriting, I think it might have just been a reflection of inexperience.
Team Maze Runner.
From adaptations. But overall, where can everyone follow you to keep talking about films? Dimitri, you're on Twitter.
Yeah, that's turning out great. At DMovies1701. And I just throw out, the tweets I throw out are all movie related and things that I find cool. For example, just the other day, I found out a breakdown of the opening shot and scene in Back to the Future. And it's amazing. It's so cool.
You're amazing.
Well,
that's a great trilogy, too.
That movie, again, is near perfect. The script, as you'll find,
yep.
Beginning, middle, and end, self-contained.
Right. Sarah, you do not have a Twitter. Hashtag Sarah go to Twitter. Roxy, where can everyone follow you?
You can find me everywhere at Roxy Stryer.
Yes, and you can follow me on Twitter at SarahPeenyTV. Even though we talk about films, you can follow all of us here at AnatomyOfAMovie.com, and also check us out on Movie Talk Nation, because we're going to be integrating to even a bigger place where we talk movies in all of its parts, pretty much.
Welcome to Movie Talk Nation!
Follow us on Twitter at Movie Anatomy. Thank you for listening and staying with us to dissect it, and we'll probably be back for the second and third film.
I will certainly be here.
Yes. And it should be Movie Talk Nation.
Definitely check out our other dissections that we have in the future. Thank you all for listening. We will see you for our next dissection.
See you.
From producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the rest of the Anatomy of a Movie staff, we would like to thank you for listening and subscribing to the show. If you have any questions or comments, feel free to email or tweet us. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been Anatomy of a Movie.